Like Call It What You Want, which we know is your favorite podcast about the beautiful game, Vuori is committed to delivering a great experience for everyone, which is highlighted by their new perspective on performance apparel. Everything is designed to work out in, but doesn't look or feel like it. In fact, I'm rocking their Stratotech polo right now, along with their Sunday performance jogger pants, so I can be business on top when I'm on camera, but super comfortable on the bottom. And it's just the best. Vuori gear is incredibly versatile, and it can be used for just about any activity. Running, training, swimming, lounging around, hosting podcasts, doing errands, whatever your heart desires, because Vuori is an investment in your happiness. And for our listeners, they are offering 20% off your first purchase. So go get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet at Vuori.com/call it. That's Vuori.com/call it. Not only will you receive 20% off your first purchase, but enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75 and free returns. Go to Vuori.com/call it and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing. Another exciting installment of Soccer We Trust. I'm Jimmy Conrad alongside Hollywood Heath Pierce and Charlie Chuckwack and Davies will be joining us very, very soon as we break down all the exciting action and muddy action, I should say, from the El Salvador U.S. Men's National Team game and the CONCACAF Nations League. Now, Heath, before we go anywhere, this ended 1-1, by the way, in case you didn't see it or are living under a rock or don't have social media or whatever. It ended 1-1. Jordan Morris, coming out of the blue, I thought after Granada having somewhat of a mixed performance, not doing too much, put a stamp on the game, I was surprised to see him come off the bench. He ends up getting a vital goal for us to salvage a result. That would have been the first loss for the U.S. against El Salvador since 1992. So a pretty big deal, Hollywood Heath.
Yeah, it was a huge deal. And, you know, I think naturally the question is going to be, and I think there's actually been some questions in the comments of like, does this change Jordan Morris's status? And not to get too into that now, because I know we'll cover that when Chuck Wagon Davies is on, but like, but it does in a way, because it shows an ability to provide service or be serviceable when you're not in the starting lineup, to be able to come in and have a big moment like that.
Right.
The timing of it, the power of that, the willingness, that sort of emphasis is a really important factor when you're looking late in games in a World Cup, when you're looking at tough moments and you're Greg Berhalter and you're scanning that bench going, who's going to get me the thing that I need in these next few minutes. It isn't always a profile of a player where you go, you know, well, he likes, you know, he's got a good attitude. He's going to go in and fight. That's usually guys that are like, you know, trying to close out games as subs. But somebody that has a little bit of that X factor. And I think Jordan Morris, when the game gets big and the field gets big and things get chaotic, he tends to thrive. Now, that was an individual moment of brilliance. Obviously, a fantastic ball being put in. But to be able to finish that off. Yeah.
That's, I mean, we can use the same thing that you just described with Jordan Morris with De La Torre. Like, he comes in, he's got to find his way into the game, finds it very quickly. And I thought he had another significant impact on the team. And it makes me wonder if
he's
we got to get him on the field and get Brendan Aaronson a little higher, maybe in the false nine or team away in the false nine and Aaronson wide, just so we can get De La Torre, who I think connects the dots a little bit better than when we have MMA, Musa, McKinney, and Adams in midfield. Mm-hmm. Now, we're going to get into all that. But before we take any steps further, I do have to announce our winner for the $100 gift card of the Paramount Plus.
People keep on winning, Jimmy. People keep on winning.
And we're going to give another one away tonight. So if you're not Kyle Caldarelli, then you're going to have another opportunity to win tonight. So congratulations to Kyle. You were selected at random, and our producer has DM'd you with the details on how to redeem your prize. $100 gift card to Paramount Plus. What? You get Champions League, Europa League, NWSL, Serie A. You get Scottish Premiership, Brasileiro. It's all popping off, and you get series and movies and NFL and South Park and all that good stuff. If you want to win one tonight, we're going to give another one away, okay? This is you got to follow us first and foremost on Twitter, ISWTPod. And make sure you drop a follow. You can leave us a P+ there. Just leave us a comment with P+, or you can do it in the comments right now with your Twitter handle. That's how you're entered to win. We are like Santa Claus out here. We're just trying to give it. We're like Oprah Winfrey.
Can I tell you one thing that I like about that, Jimmy?
Shoot.
I'll wake up in the morning now, and it's not even just the live viewers that are getting in on this. I'll wake up and I'll be like, oh yeah, look, I got some notifications. And all it is P+. People saying P+, which means they're engaged. And it means people are watching it at their leisure, but still having a chance themselves a gift card. So I love it.
Okay, now, I know it's going to be really easy for all of us, people watching, listening, to want to kind of get to the end. But what did you think actually about Greg Berhalter starting 11. So we knew Horvath was going to start, and he did. He's actually the one player that I think hurt his stock tonight because he has to make that save. Do you think that guy was shooting or crossing?
No,
I think he took a peek and saw where that Horvath was off his line.
Horvath definitely got caught. Whether he was crossing or shooting, Horvath got caught cheating. You know, he got caught frozen 100%. Looking out for that cross, and that ball whipped in from a tough angle. Again, you know what it's like, Jimmy. You've played on plenty of pitches that are less than ideal. That there's the unpredictability of the touch.
That looked like my high school field, whatever. To be honest
with you. Yeah, exactly. Well, I was just actually talking with Alex, our producer, beforehand. He was talking about West Texas, how their football, American football pitches or fields look like that after a long game. And I remember those games where it's like October and the dew is up on the field and it's a night game, Friday night lights, high school football. I'm like, the thing is like trashed by the end of the game. That's what it was like. And so it changes the circumstances of a lot of things. Now, I've been reading a lot, Jimmy, about the attitude and the fight of this team. Mm-hmm. The upside of what I saw against Uruguay, what I saw against Morocco, I was like, man, I think we're past the fight part. Like the fight part is established, right? But every once in a while, you got to go and fighting's going to be the thing that gets you in and out of your problems. It got him out of the problems today, continuing to fight, finding a little bit of life after the Areola red card. And I think that fight is a really strong foundation. If you go back again, and I know we've probably beat this topic to death, but all the national teams in history that have had any success, that's always been the foundation of the American players. Like that willingness to, you put on that shirt and you're willing to give everything for it and make it really difficult for your opponent. Now, I don't think the U.S. particularly played well, but the circumstances were really difficult already going to El Salvador. You add that to the pitch and you add that to the circumstances. It was going to be a hard match from start to finish. However, I thought that fight was there and present. And if that's the minimum that we have going into a World Cup, while I don't like our chances to go really, really far, but it's a really strong foundation considering that fight is the same fight we've had generationally, but for the talent is better than any talent that we've ever had generationally.
No. I think that's really well said. And I think that it took a while for us to establish that fight. It's almost like we needed the game to get a little chippy for us to, I thought it would. Once we went down a goal, I'm like, okay, at what point is this going to get into a dogfight? We were still trying to play. I remember right at the end of the first half, we had 33 consecutive passes. And where it started?
Were you Olaying? Were you Olaying in your living room?
I was Olaying. I was Olaying. And we weren't going anywhere. And then we lost the ball. And then three passes later, El Salvador has it in our attacking third and draws a dangerous free kick. I was like, whoa, you still have to turn that possession into something. It still felt like we were trying to not necessarily play pretty, but still trying to make something of the game. When there was nothing to make, the situation didn't allow for it to happen, given that the field and the situation. Now, to somebody's point, both teams have to play on it. So there's really no excuse about bad pitch, whatever. Everybody still has to play on the same thing. But before I go any further with my thoughts, though, I want to bring on Charlie Chuckwagon Davis. All right, let's bring on Super Chuck and see. I'm just going to add more and more nicknames to you guys as this continues going. I don't know. I thought he was going to pop on. I thought that was a really nice. There he is. I got the mahogany in my life.
He's picked the wood grain room, Charlie. There was a lot of concern as to what was taking you so long.
There's
a rumor that you're just like kind of stuck between like too many decisions, paralysis through analysis of what room you've
got. Too many rooms to choose from.
Yeah.
You know, I have the same shirt on, but give us your overall thoughts on the game and what you saw.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't the best of matches to watch, but I guess I really was just curious in a couple of players, like individuals. I wasn't necessarily banking on the result. It was more, what does Haji Wright look like from the start?
Dude, did he get subbed out after 45?
That was a decision, man. He made that decision. That's like a sign. That's a sign.
I was pissed that he got, like, dude, give that guy at least 60.
To be honest, though, you're playing for points in Nations League also. Like, there is some significance
to that. Okay,
that.
And listen, Ferreira came on after 5 minutes and got around the goalkeeper and that play was already more dangerous than anything Haji Wright had created by himself, at least. He had that one thing on the sideline that he did well. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, Chuck, but I just was kind of pissed that he got taken off after 40.
Yeah, no, I mean, he didn't help himself.
But is it hard to evaluate though in the situation given the field, lack of possession?
No, because I guess you look at opportunity as universal, regardless of opponent, regardless of field conditions. You get your opportunity, you take it. And whether he was scoring goals in this game or his runs or his press, just the involvement, the overall involvement, it lacked. It lacked something in terms of
just lack the modern speed of the game where his impactful, the demand of a striker that's not scoring 50 goals has to be.
And he got his chance and he got his one chance and he absolutely scuffed it. Left footed. He
should have put that on frame.
Position.
I agree with you. He should have put that on frame.
So for me in Jesus Ferrer, and obviously I am ultra critical with the nine position. Jesus Ferrer has only moved up, and he's already at the number one spot, but he's only moved up and distanced himself from the rest of the crowd.
I'll just say just to play the other side of this, if I'm Haji Wright, I'm pissed I didn't get 75 minutes against Granada. I would have. He probably would have banged two or three goals.
I'm guessing you didn't earn it. You don't know how he trained.
That's fair. He must have not trained well enough to
win more minutes, right?
I just want to make sure that's part of the conversation.
Yeah, and I'm sure that's part of the game where fans don't get a chance to see it. Similar to Jordan Pefolk. Everybody's screaming, look what he's doing in Switzerland. But in training, not good enough. And we don't see that necessarily. But for the players, for Greg Berhalter, he's basing a lot of his choices on what he sees in camp. Because one thing is seeing things on video. Maybe he's gone over to see a couple of times players play. But how does it look like in training sessions? And I know not a lot can be based on training sessions, but you get a good idea of work rate and touches and your technical ability and tactical awareness. And obviously, players didn't do enough to move up and win more time.
Okay, no, that's fair. And I appreciate you saying that Jesus Ferrer definitely earned that opportunity against Granada. I like that angle a lot. So I appreciate you bringing that up. Now, Heath, let's go talk about the defenders, and I want to get Charlie's insight on this too. It was hard to evaluate him because outside of Horvath having a bit of a shocker on the goal.
Cannon
could have done better.
Don't tell me you're going to let Reggie Cannon off the hook.
No, I'm not going to let him off the hook, but I was looking more center backs, but I don't know.
Yeah, I was watching this game with a couple of friends who are massive like old school US soccer nerds, like deep in the cuts of these guys, like known these kids since they were like 15, 14 years old, like can name any player in Major League Soccer that's close to signing a contract. And their whole thing they landed on basically was it wasn't whether or not it was again, the Ferreira example that you used, Charlie, that's the Yedlin example of like Cannon has not shown me anything that makes him different than Yedlin. And Yedlin has the experience that at least I know what I'm going to get from him. And Cannon, who continues to get opportunities, has not gone above and beyond. Now, Yedlin's made mistakes throughout qualifying. Cannon has been solid throughout qualifying, but he hasn't gone above and beyond to knock Yedlin out of the depth chart. And that's, to me, what it comes down to. It wasn't that Cannon was poor. It's just that I don't see Cannon as an attacker. I don't see him as an out-and-out, kind of one-on-one lockdown defender either. He is solid. He's serviceable. But when you look at the depth chart, that's what I think drops him down behind a Yedlin who can do all those things at a little bit of a higher pace and with more experience.
Tell me this, Jimmy and Heath, as a right back, okay, or defender in general, Larine, he's not going to beat you with pace. He's not going to beat you on the dribble. He's all left footed, like only uses the left. Right foot is for standing.
For the gas pedal.
What prevents Reggie Cannon from saying, I'm going to absolutely close down the space, but take away your left foot. If you're going to beat me, you're going to beat me with your right foot on this cross, knowing that he doesn't have too much. And he had like a good two steps away from him.
No, he did. I agree with you how he closed the ball, but there's no way you think once he hits that your goalkeeper doesn't have that covered.
Right. Take it away?
Horvath and Reggie Cannon didn't help themselves tonight from a defensive standpoint. Mm-hmm. I agree with you on that. The other three.
If he was still a distance away, but if it was a cross into a dangerous position, he may have gotten a leg on it. That was like a shot near post that caught the goalkeeper cheating. But again, for me, I would say, and not to excuse him of any of this, on a pitch like this, obviously you get in one-on-one situations, you give yourself a little bit of buffer because if you slip or you overcommit or you get up underneath them, somebody who is decently tricky on the ball and they can pull you off, like, and you're skating out there, that puts you into a tough spot. So you tend to hesitate. It's not a good reason. It's not a valid reason, but it is, you know, you're asking defenders like in that position, you're giving yourself a little bit more buffer to be like, you know, I might have to like get out of this bind a little bit differently. So I'm going to give him a little bit in front of me instead of like overcommitting. And now he's got space in behind me, which, you know, it's solid. He's not going to beat you.
If it's a winger, I'd say, yeah.
But do you think he meant to shoot it, Charlie? I think he meant to shoot. I think when you see the camera from behind, when you see the, I mean, it didn't look like a missed cross. It would have had a little bit more bend on it. I think that he took a peek before it. To your point, if Reggie Cannon had got out there quicker, he wouldn't have been able to pick up his head and take a peek at what Horvath was, where was he standing. I think he just went for it and just said, you know what? I'm going to swing it as hard as I can. And maybe they'll go in. And it did.
I would love to give him the benefit of the doubt.
I do too, but I'm just like,
I think he's just hitting it.
You don't think he's out at the touchline looking to hit a banger near post, Charlie?
Terrible cross though. He hit it way too clean for it to be a bad cross.
It was a goal.
And you're spot on. It was a terrible cross that ended up as a goal.
I don't know. Maybe I'm giving it too much credit.
What El Salvador player have you seen shoot from that distance? Striker, attacker, and there you're telling me a left back?
I don't know, man.
From 40 yards, 30 yards.
He's about to get signed to the San Francisco Glens, huh? Yes. You just got yourself a new player.
I got myself a new player.
Oh, God.
Okay, but it just seemed like he hit that pretty clean for a cross.
It wasn't the usual like cross that goes in the goal where like they're whipping it in, but it's moving away. Hey, like, it's, you know, hey. I want to see it again.
Let me see it again. I want to see it again. At some point, I'll have to look at it again. So center backs, pretty solid, all things considered. Not surprised to see Aaron Long start his fourth consecutive game as Greg Berhalter's favorite player. I know that Walker Zimmerman had an MRI from what I heard behind the scenes, just to kind of check on a foot or a knee thing. Everything's going to be fine, but they didn't want to risk him, obviously. So Aaron Long gets his fourth consecutive start. Eric Palmer Brown, nowhere to be seen. That probably doesn't bode well for him. It looks like Cameron Carter-Vickers has kind of moved into one of the top four spots. I mean, right now, after these four games, I would say it's Zimmerman, Long, Cameron Carter-Vickers, and Chris Richards is kind of my four. I think Palmer Brown might be out, McKenzie out, all the other guys out. That's I don't know. Charlie, I come to you. What are you thinking about the center back position?
At the moment, yes. I still think Mark McKenzie can play his way into this team.
So can Eric Palmer Brown potentially. He's just, I don't know. We got 180 minutes left. That's it. 180 minutes yet.
What it's worth, by the way, but Mark McKenzie was told, I'm bringing these guys in because I want a fresh look. I want to get a good look at them. This is why Mark McKenzie wasn't brought in. Now, we all know that we've been told a whole bunch of things in our life that may be true, may not be true.
I want to give you a vacation. Yeah, I'm going to give you. You've earned it.
Hey, you look tired, man. You sleeping much? Like, I'm going to let you have a little time off, you know. take that with a pinch or a grain of whatever. But, if he goes back and he's playing, Greg Berhalter also liked Mark McKenzie at a certain point when Mark McKenzie was already not playing, right? He's got managers, coaches, they have things that they see in people that you can't talk them out of and things that they like that sometimes will make us, when you're competing for a spot or watching it as an analyst or in any circumstance, you go, man, that person's crazy because they have their ways. They have the people that they trust, they believe in, and trust is a big thing too.
Okay. So, Heath, do you agree with me on the four center backs right now as it stands?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Chris Richards has established or built any rapport in this national team yet, by the way. I think he's still a young green potential. He hasn't had an outstanding. I haven't seen him have one lights out performance for the national
team. No, that's true.
But he's playing week in and week out when he's fit and healthy for Hoffenheim, who are a big club in the Bundesliga. So
they're working on getting him back. So
and so when I think about that to the trajectory of the player, the pathway that he's on, yes. But in terms of his performances with the national team so far, there hasn't been one performance where I go, okay, now he's competing or challenging for something. It's always been like, okay, you know, steps forward, but not like, okay, now he's in. Like Aaron Long inserted himself into the conversation. Greg loves him, whether it's performance-based, but you could see the instant trajectory of Aaron Long when he's back, he's fit, he's healthy, he's in. Walker Zimmerman jammed his way in, and now he is like well established. I haven't seen that from the other guys. Cameron Carter-Vickers, I do think falls into that. Eric Palmer Brown, I thought would, but you know, I'm kind of mixing what Greg's showing us and also what I've seen.
Hey, shout out to the comments right here, Julius C, who's always in here. Laren said post game interview that he meant it to be a cross. It was a cross.
Well, there you go. That's what I said. I thought I meant that. I said this. Yeah. Yeah. Fine. It was a cross. Well, fair play to him actually admitting that. Most guys wouldn't. Yeah. So I'll give him all the credit in the world for making that happen. That was a clean ass cross. Though.
Must he be friends with Horvath, huh? He must be friends with Horvath.
Yeah, because he didn't help Horvath at all, by the way. Yeah, that's unfortunate for Horvath. Now, talk about the midfield.
Yes, please.
I had a good conversation here with a friend that I was watching this with about how MMA, Musa McKinney and Adams, has worked really hard together to qualify us for a World Cup, and they should get to see out that World Cup. Now, I know we've had a lot of conversations about Aronson or Reyna or De La Torre, but there's something about MMA. I thought Yunus Musa was my man of the match today. I thought he was fantastic, and I like when he takes over a game. I thought that he did a really good job of breaking the lines. Now, to Charlie's point, and this is a great point, he's still lacking a little bit of that quality in the final third, whether it's a cross or whatever. But I thought tonight he got closer to bringing attacks to completion.
Set up to that, the goalkeeper made that save. Oh man, that was so nice.
It would have been a very tasty goal. I was really impressed with Yunus Musa tonight, and I think MMA will probably be our starting. The more I see it, the more I think that that's probably the way to go. But if we don't have an effective number nine, not to say Ferreira is not the guy, but I still feel like I still want to see Timo Weah at number nine. That's all I want to say. But with regard to MMA, De La Torre, I thought was great off the bench. He has a significant impact. As he said prior to you coming on, Charlie, when we're talking about Jordan Morris, when Greg looks at the bench, he's got to look at guys and be like, that guy can give me this in this situation. And J-Mo showed that tonight. De La Torre shown it a couple times, whether as a starter or as a super sub. So Charlie, I'll come to you first on this midfield. How did you think the guys played tonight?
They didn't play great, but I will say Weston McKennie, we saw his quality, big, big difference when he's on the pitch. Like he shows that he can be that eight that's going to be creating, and he's not afraid to play those difficult balls, and he has the quality to play those balls in between the lines and have that killer pass. Yunus Musa, yes, he didn't score, but he gave me more in the attacking third. He showed like the ceiling is so high for him that I believe he can be that playmaker, that goal scorer, the one who's facilitating on midfield, who gets assists. That's the midfield. There is no doubt MMA is the starting trio come Qatar. And you wouldn't want anyone else to kind of get involved
with that
at all. But I would say Luca De La Torre, awesome super sub to come in to change the game, give you a different dynamic. And Gio Reyna, whether he's on the right side and gets back to being in full fitness, or maybe he's that super sub too as well. I mean, the fact that you have two, three players who can come in and change the game, that's massive for this.
Yeah, it's massive. It really is. It really is. Yeah. And Heath, are you feeling the same way?
Yeah, it's hard to argue otherwise. I still really like a look or a version of Brendan Aaronson in the middle of the pitch. But if not, I have trouble putting him on the wing over Timo Weah. And I guess I'm jumping quickly to
no, Timo it's fine. I think it's a nice segue.
The point being that Timo Weah, he just makes the game predictable for this team. When he gets the ball at his feet, he gets up to full speed, he squares up a defender, and when you're a defender, and actually the defender made a couple of really good defensive plays against him, it is so hard to defend against when somebody squares up on you instead of running you down. And that's a different part of his game that we're starting to see now. Instead of running just to the touchline, now he's kind of taking that touch inward and running at players. And just having a player that can really push you. Now, again, wasn't great tonight, didn't do it well tonight, didn't get behind or beat his defender more often than not tonight. But that willingness and that tent and that confidence, I think, is a really important thing. Even on a night like this, you can see the willingness to do that as opposed to, oh, okay, doesn't do it the first time and then you disappears for a half. And so it's hard for me to see where Brendan Aaronson fits if it's not in the midfield or it's in the center of the park as a starter within this national team. But again, Brendan Aaronson's another one that I'm like, Greg Berhalter can look at him at any point and be like, yeah, you fit into this team as a sub, right? The game is a little bit bigger. It's a little bit chaotic, or I need energy. I need this. The only downside is that I truly believe this. When Brendan Aaronson's not on the field, and another thing that I had found out tonight, Brendan Aaronson is apparently in the highest percentage of like 0.01% of ball winners, like attacking ball winners in the world, in terms of like his approach to winning balls in good spots that kicks off attacks that don't always lead to goals or assists. but apparently his numbers, and I can't remember what the exact statistic was, but it's in the top like 1% of footballers in the world, of his ability to win the ball in good spots and set up attacks for teammates. And there's just something about that. Now, that works over a full season, you know, 34, 38 games. That plays a little bit of a different role in terms of an XG. And in the national team, it's not always the case because it's more fluid. It's left less often, so it's hard to justify. But having him on the field, I think this team presses better. Take out El Salvador, but presses better and can find ways to create without having to use all 11 players on the field to break down a good, staunch defense.
Okay, so then let's continue the attacking conversation. Mm-hmm. So you got Christian Pulisic, Timo Weah on the right side. Charlie, is Ferreira your number nine going into the Wales game, given what we've seen through these four games and only knowing we have two opponents left, which looks like Japan and Saudi Arabia will be playing in the September friendlies? Still a rumor, but it hasn't been confirmed, but it looks like those two games will be played in Europe. What do you, or do you feel like there's still a combination because of Aaronson's impact, as Heath has talked about, and obviously, hopefully, the reemergence of Gio Reyna back into the team as he gets healthy? Is there room for some kind of, you know, makeshift false nine here, or do you think you're still going to go with some type of traditional nine?
Charlie, before you answer real quick, before you answer, I just watched the replay of Jordan Moore scoring that goal right now because I want you to add him into your attack analysis.
Yeah.
That was a little chip on the shoulder celebration of saying, like, there was some sort of exhalation that he exhaled.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah, I agree.
He was like pounding his chest that there was something deeply personal for him that was validating in that moment. So I want to get your take on him, obviously.
And whether he played himself into the team, because he wasn't as great against Granada.
I would say if the World Cup was starting in 2 weeks, Ferreira is your starting nine in the first game of the World Cup. He, you know, you look at the depth chart right now, and Haji Wright, I think he, if anything, just went down the depth chart. It didn't help himself. And you could say he didn't get enough time to show himself, but when he did, he didn't give enough. And when you are you're on the outside trying to get in, you need to perform. You need to grab your opportunity. And he didn't do that. So Jesus Ferreira is your one. I think people still hold out hope that Ricardo Pepi can turn around in the Bundesliga, and you have 6 months to do it. And that if he does, then that's going to be a very tough choice for Greg Berhalter to have to make, especially if Jesus continues to perform in MLS. Given that, the depth is not great because there's so many what ifs. You know, you have Daryl Dike, you have Matthew Hoppe, Ricardo Pepi, Jordan Pifok.
At some point, I just feel like we need to go with whatever we're going to go with.
And so Jesus is the guy right now. And it's more based on his work rate, his ability to press, his ability to check into spaces and try and connect, but also try to create space for Christian and Timo Weah. He also is running in behind now. His only downside right now where he needs to improve between now and the World Cup is his hold up play. That's it.
Mm-hmm. But Charlie, here's a question on Haji Wright for you. Somebody had made this comment tonight that I was with, and he had said, "This is something worth discussing, and it might mean nothing, but it might mean something." When you looked at, like, going into the halftime, 43rd minute, you had 11 players on the field from the U.S. team, and 10 of them were covered in mud. And there was one player, and that was Haji Wright, that hadn't had a scrap of mud on him in that game. Does that mean anything to you in terms of that willingness to scrap, or is it the fact that we couldn't find him in good spots? Or is, I mean, I'm using it anecdotally and not literally, but like,
I think it just signals his lack of involvement.
Yeah, I agree with that.
The dirtier he would mean to me that he's involved. He's getting hit because the ball's always coming to his feet. He's winning fouls in the attacking half, you know, doing the dirty work that a striker would need to do if they're not getting the ball where they'd like or getting opportunities. You have to figure out ways to be effective. He didn't do that. So therefore he was irrelevant. That's why his jersey was as clean as could be. And to touch on the Jordan Morris aspect, that what you saw was all the pressure he's putting on himself to catch up to himself prior to his last injury. It's a lot. It's a World Cup in front of you. You had this dream of going to Europe and having a success story. You have a big injury. You come back. You rebuild yourself up. Another injury. And so there's a lot of doubt. And self-doubt, but also doubt around.
Well, of course. Yeah. Can he ever be the player he once was?
Right. And so I think he's done a good job of building himself back up, but he knows as well as we do, we've talked to him, that he needs to continue to grow and get match fit and his sharpness. This goal was fantastic movement. It wasn't a lot of movement, but it was fantastic movement. And the fact that he dropped, dipped the shoulder, got off the defender's shoulder, kind of was able to trick him in the way of thinking he was going to make one movement, cuts in front of him. And it's a beautiful way to finish the goal.
What's interesting was that there was a precursor to that on the handball that they didn't call, where he was caught on the other side of the guy. They probably should have called it. VAR was there. I think they would have given us a penalty. But on the next play, he makes that slight adjustment, right? He gets himself in a position where I'm going to get inside of the defender to get on the end of a cross as opposed to being on the outside of him. And obviously, it leads to a good goal. Luca De La Torre played both of those balls to the back post. I think that's just something of note, because I think when he does come in, he tries to identify those weaknesses. And obviously, when you sit on the bench, you probably have a pretty good idea of how the game is being played and where he can exploit those weaknesses. And I thought that he did a good job as well. I just want to give a shout out to both of those super subs. And we should probably give a shout out to Paul Arriola, who got a pretty harsh red card. Didn't deserve that, especially because the referee wasn't handing out cards at all to start the game when the guys were flying around. And all decided.
This is the problem, man. Is like that ref.
He's in the World Cup, by the way.
He held the red card in his face for 30 seconds.
No,
it wasn't long enough.
Down.
It wasn't long enough.
He held it and he just stared at him. And you could tell if you go back and watch
it's personal.
It's personal. And it's like maybe not directly personal, but he became the star of the show. He became the
hero. What would you have done? Heath, what would you have done?
You know, if somebody didn't like, if I was the ref or if I was Arriola.
Arriola.
Oh, yeah, dude. They did a great job of keeping their calm, because that arrogance to hold that eye contact with the red card in your face as if you hadn't seen it is like such a level of arrogance.
Yes.
And confidence.
It's degrading.
Go back and give a red card because you know you got to make up for stuff later on is horrible.
I have to say this because FG in the chat says it was a red card. And Mike, listen. That could have been a red card, and yes, it probably is by definition.
No.
Okay, whatever. He's not
showing any studs.
It's not,
okay.
No.
Listen.
Excessive force. There was not excessive force.
Whatever he's calling, my problem is less of the red card call, and the more of the fact that there were some egregious tackles that were happening before, and he's just saying play on.
He was reffing this game like a friendly, like a competitive match. He wasn't giving warnings. He wasn't slowing it down.
No,
he was reffing it like a friendly was, where you don't want to lose the flow of the game. But that's not what that game is when you're playing on a muddy pitch in El Salvador for points. You got to control it.
All you want is consistency when you're a player. If you're going to – like the fact that he gave him a straight red, I was like, what? You didn't – there was some crazy-ass tackles in the first half that he did not call at all. And then I was like, well, the U.S. still has it. Play on. I'm like, but he just lost, like, his knee. How is that? It just doesn't make any sense to me. So well, I think it was a
reckless.
Pisses me off more than anything else. Yes. Yeah, it was a lot of reckless tackles.
It was a reckless tackle. For sure, yellow. But a
100%
red?
A yellow. Come a red on, just man. Felt like in the flow no. of the game, he just that just lacked some consistency. Mm-mm. And fair play to the U.S. for actually responding in a positive way.
Yes.
When Musa made that, but Ferreira plays a great ball into Musa, by the way, which speaks to your hold-up play. Gets the ball in a good transition spot and plays Musa through, which ends up setting up a red card for El Salvador. And obviously getting back onto equal terms really gave us that advantage.
Did we have any red cards in qualifying, by the way?
I never got any red cards in qualifying, but I did get one in my last national team game. That referee, remember in L.A., Heath, Archundia, that guy hated me with a passion.
Oh, that was against Honduras, right?
He gave me two yellow cards in 15 minutes, and I was the captain, dude. Like,
was one of those like a handball on the goal line or something?
It wasn't a handball. Listen, I'm not. He's obsessed with me. Easy. You know what? I don't even want to get into this.
Did you know that while over 60% of Americans dream of starting their own business, less than 20% of them take the first step? The reason? Building a business is tough. Taylor Brands is simplifying the business journey. From launching and managing to growing your business, Taylor Brands isn't just another tool. It's your online business partner from launch to success. With Taylor Brands, building your dream business becomes an effortless experience. Their comprehensive platform guides you through every step, ensuring you have everything you need in one place. From LLC formation to bookkeeping, invoicing to acquiring licenses and permits, and even setting up your bank account, Taylor Brands handles it all seamlessly. And our listeners will receive 35% off Taylor Brands LLC formation plans using our link, taylorbrands.com/CBS Sports. That's TAILORBRANDS.com/CBS Sports. So start your business journey today with Taylor Brands.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Let's talk about the Ticos. Joel Campbell scores in the 3rd minute. Kind of necessarily a broken play, but a throw in off the sideline, get around the corner, cross. He's like in between 3 players, gets enough on it, gets into the corner, and the Kiwis don't have any answer. But we get to see the Ticos led by 36-year-old Brian Ruiz, who probably is a little bit slower than all of us in the World Cup. This is kind of a last hurrah for a lot of those guys. Pretty cool to see the Ticos make it once again.
It's incredible. I mean, if you think about going to, again to the final day with Panama, it shows sort of the quality of CONCACAF in different ways. Like Costa Rica, when you look at them, when you watch them play, they just have an ability to find results, right? Scoring in the 3rd minute and then just grinding it out for the rest of the way with players that are experienced. I thought was a fantastic finish for just the region as a whole, obviously not wanting to give up that spot or lose that game to a New Zealand side who, you know, only struggled with Tahiti on their way to this final game, winning 1-0 and then kind of battered everyone else on the way to this match. So great for the Ticos, great for the region, great for Major League Soccer as a number of players are domestic as well. And so just great to have 4 teams from CONCACAF in the World Cup.
All right, so let's look forward to their group because their group arguably is the group of death, Charlie. We got Spain.
There'll be 3 after the group stages.
Yeah, Spain, Germany, Japan. And they might be just having a cup of coffee. Maybe the achievement is just qualifying for the World Cup itself. Doing anything outside of that is going to be a bonus. So, what are your thoughts on their group? Because that is extremely difficult. They play Spain first, just so everybody knows. Play Spain first, then Japan, and then they play Germany last. I don't know if that makes any difference for you and your thoughts about this.
in the way they play, the style of play, the games are all going to be close.
Yes.
So they have a shot to have some upsets. Now, do I think that's going to be long-term success? No. But really, it was to give the country hope and to get into the World Cup. And we knew that's how they were going to play. Defend a conceded possession to New Zealand. New Zealand's not known for keeping the ball in possession and breaking you down, but Costa Rica had 33% of the ball because they just defended. And what played out, I guess what really played into their hands was the fact that they scored early. And if they can score early, knowing that that's the strength of their team, we're just going to defend, then I think giving New Zealand the ball was not a problem. It almost worked out for them because they just said, keep coming. We're just going to defend. We have Keylor Navas in goal. We're all set. So Joel Campbell, he came up with the big goal and then they just defended. So I'm excited for Costa Rica, but realistically, probably the only result they're really going to get is against Japan.
So if Navas
possibility,
Navas could stand on his head. You know, he could pull a Courtois and just make some incredible saves.
3 draws.
They could get three draws. New Zealand did that back in 2010 and didn't get through the group. They didn't score any. They didn't give up any, which is a pretty unique record in World Cup history. But this group of players, some of these players, were part of the 2014 World Cup group of death, which had England, Uruguay, and Italy in it. And Costa Rica won that group. So I think maybe because they're all 8 years older, this might be a bigger task for them, Heath. But it's not outside the realm of possibility, especially if Navas, you know, does what he does, which is make big saves on a regular basis. I don't know. It's going to be tough.
You go back and watch Portugal play in the Euros in 2016. They won 1 game in the whole tournament in regulation time. That was it. When they beat Wales 2-0 in the semifinals. Mm-hmm. Every other game, they drew or they won like 117th minute and they won the Euros. Now, I'm not saying Costa Rica are going to win the World Cup. That's not going to happen. But you can see difficult ways in which Portugal would make it really difficult for opponents and then find a way and
They also had Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yeah, you know, they got Alvaro Saborio. He was a golden MLS Cup winner and a Golden Boot winner in Major League Soccer. So,
oh my God,
he just happens to be 40 now.
Hey, don't hate on Saborio. I mean,
I'm not hating on him. No, he's got it. And Joel Campbell was going to be
a baller,
a huge play at Arsenal. Didn't get to that level, but like. Again, they just have, again, that experience, and they're sort of, if you looked at them halfway through World Cup qualifying, they just sort of started playing with house money, and it played a different way where they just have gone on this run. And you take that to a World Cup, it's not like there's such a far gap between them and their opponents. I mean, there is a pretty large gap between Spain and Germany. We saw Germany last World Cup, same thing. One of those, Spain or Germany, is going to probably fall off in this World Cup or underperform, even though they're both in great form right now. I guess I'm trying to get to find as many excuses to say that Costa Rica has a chance to get some results. Like Charlie mentioned, there is a way or a pathway there. And Costa Rica, of all teams, have been doing that now or had that mentality now for the last six months or so. And it's been working.
What's interesting, I just look back at the results of 2014. They were down 1-0 to Uruguay after 25 minutes. Cavani scored. They rattled off three goals in the second half to win that one 3-1. Then they beat Italy 1-0 and actually matched them for shots and shots on goal and maybe a little less possession. And then they drew England 0-0 to win the group. It's, I could see them maybe pulling off some crazy result against Spain where it's a draw and then potentially getting a win against Japan. And now they've positioned themselves to do what they just, and maybe pull off an upset. I just wouldn't sleep on the Ticos. And I think people in other countries, European countries in particular, just don't seem to rate CONCACAF, and Costa Rica just seems like, it's Costa Rica. That's an easy 3 points. Let's look ahead to the other teams, Charlie.
I think that's exactly what they have to do to look when they're looking at this group stages.
Yeah.
Take it game by game. We're going to defend. We're trying. And no one's given us a shot. And this is a group that they have some quality. And especially in terms of set pieces, they're a team that can hurt you on set pieces. Calvo, he definitely plays differently when he plays with Costa Rica than he does in MLS.
Oh, so, no question.
I like what I see from Uruguay, just this belief, and they're carrying that into the World Cup. And when you have that much confidence and belief, and they're okay with conceding possession, they're okay with defending for 90 minutes, knowing that they can still get the result, then anything is possible. Anything is possible.
I think Spain and Germany are the obvious two to come out of this group if you had to predict right now, but group of deaths are tricky,
don't
man.
Don't sleep on Japan, man.
You can't sleep on those. And it's looking like we're going to play Japan in one of the September friendlies. So I'm excited about that from the U.S. perspective, because I think they're a good team. And Saudi Arabia, I think, will be tricky as well. So those will be two good opponents for us in our last two friendlies before Greg has to name his 26-man roster. All right, let's
throw this out there, though.
Yeah, throw it out.
Last time I spoke to Joel Campbell, he was like, MLS, come get me.
Wow.
He
42 minutes in, we got our flex of the day.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's been a while since someone's flexed, because when Charlie said that, it hit me square in the nose.
I think
my nose is bleeding because it's been a while since I heard a flex.
The last time I talked to Joel Campbell, he said, okay. You know who we need to get on, though? We need to get Julian Lescott making fun of some flexes where I didn't know what he actually does anymore. But now that England just got smoked by Hungary, I'd like to get some English, former English international perspective.
He doesn't want the smoke.
He doesn't. And now they all want Gareth Southgate out. It's kind of funny how quickly everything turns. Okay, let's leave the international game. Let's speak domestically here in the States. MLS, I mean, kind of out of nowhere. No, I'm sure this had been behind the scenes for quite some time, but strikes a very significant deal with Apple TV. $2.5 billion over 10 years. Heath, I'm going to come to you as our resident business insider here. No local broadcasts, right? So there's a bit of a knock there. There are some perks, though, that if you buy a season ticket, you're going to get a free subscription. There's no blackouts. There's a lot of things I like. And one thing I'll jump in and say very quickly before I get your insight, and obviously, Charlie, yours too, and for anybody else that wants to chime in, whether it's on Twitter, ISWT Pod, or here live on the YouTubes, I like that we're taking some risk as a league, as former MLS players. What was the traditional route wasn't working. And I like that this might not work out, but at least they're trying something different. And I like that Apple TV is so new to the sports space that I think they're going to give it the love and care and attention that the ESPN and Foxes of the world haven't at this point.
Look,
or got away from, because they used to at some point, but they maybe got away from it.
Listen, disruption is really important. look at what Paramount Plus and CBS is doing in the soccer space. They hadn't been in soccer since the 80s, right? Picked up NWSL, ended up getting Champions League a year and a half before it was supposed to because it was dropped off by Turner Sports, and has now built a catalog of incredible sports, having not been in it. And it's made others wake up and change their priorities and compete in a different way. Competition is really good. Now, there is a giant fear if you're an old traditional platform of like these disruptors like an Amazon or an Apple that have more money than anybody ever because they're leveraging money from a different part of the business that isn't always media related. Therefore, the media math is very different, right, in terms of competing for a bid. But to put in a 10-year bid is a commitment to saying, you know, and that's very different than Champions League, which is a 3-year cycle, or you know, Serie A, which is a short cycle, or La Liga, which ended up being this bigger, longer deal. It gives you a chance to figure out your audience, understand your audience, learn that sort of thing. And I think that can be, if they do it the right way, something that could be useful for the soccer space. Now, you mentioned the local rights, and I think that's something that has to get worked out for the teams because a lot of their advertising or revenue dollars get sold against, or sponsorship packages get sold against local rights, right? So here in Los Angeles, you've got LAFC have 3 or 4 of their local sponsors. There's PowerFlex Tools and like all these things that are local to this market that you're converting on sort of the spots and dots media deal that is required for them to be a sustainable club. Now, obviously that's probably going to be a trickle down of something larger, but there's a lot of that stuff to still work out. But a commitment from Apple to, which I had heard as recent as 2 weeks ago, that Apple was potentially backing out of a deal and they weren't going to be in the running anymore. To now signing this deal with Don Garber, Charlie Davies, and Tim Cook all shaking hands about it and making this thing happen.
Actually, like, this is actually he's Charlie out of one of his jobs, so I don't know. No longer doing Revs broadcast. Charlie, what are your thoughts on this? Obviously, because it impacts you, and I know Heath, you do LAFC games at times. You know, how does it change the landscape for you?
I love it. It's massive for the sport.
Yeah,
it's a milestone. You're talking about a $2.5 billion deal. Do you think
10 years was too long? Do you think 10 years was too long to offer up?
I don't, because I think for Apple's perspective is we've seen what the World Cup in 94 did for the sport in this country. MLS developing a real interest. And I think to make it worth it and valuable for Apple in this investment was, well, we have to reap the benefits after this 2026 World Cup. So we get to be part of the buildup, and then we get to see the benefits from a World Cup coming to North America. So I think it's massive. I think Apple, I mean, the brand itself to be associated to MLS, you're talking about the young up-and-coming generation, and that's what MLS has always targeted, the 18 to 35-year-old age demographic. Well, now you're going to be targeting the even younger from 12, let's say from 12 to 18, who I guess kids are at 12 are getting 10 are getting iPhones now. So you have to love this business proposition from a soccer sports enthusiast fan, because you know that the growth is there.
Hey, and the global reach too. I mean, you have this global reach that the fact that you can watch it anywhere at any point on Apple TV, anywhere around the world is pretty remarkable as well, because it kind of cuts through all these kind of rights that maybe hang up, you know, different leagues because they have, you know, different rights in different countries. So you're not always allowed to see it. So Heath, talk to me kind of about, because now MLS has to assume a lot of the production on this.
Yeah.
And they're guaranteeing a lot of standards, pretty high standards for how the production is going to go. Looks like Charlie's got another job again with the Revs.
He's really excited.
Great. Happy for Charlie.
Yeah. Congrats, Charlie, again. Jeez
Louise. Still going to have a job. I was a little worried there for a second.
Yeah. there was a discussion of like for a while of saying there's two routes that you can go with the new deal, that it could be each team would be cut a check to sort out their local broadcasts that would go into some sort of larger streaming platform, or you'll have these regional broadcast centers. And now the discussion is, I can't remember what it's called that's in Tampa that does the USL or Tampa area there, St. Petersburg or whatever, that does the USL broadcast. I can't remember the name of that studio there, of centralizing all of that type of stuff. But with that centralization, it allows you to probably leverage your catalog a lot better in terms of highlight packages, shows, more neutral type of things, because the biggest argument has been for a long time is Major League Soccer a national product, right?
why would I watch New England Revolution play against DC United if I'm from California? What is the reason behind that? Right. And now we're talking about 10 years.
You've always been a Revs fan. That's why.
Well, yeah.
Well, but I feel like they got away from that shoulder programming to make you interested in that so that you knew the storylines and the narratives that were built into that. And I wonder what the shoulder programming is going to be moving forward, because, you know, once you start to know a certain player, you start to know a story or a team and what they've gone through with their suffering, their successes, whatever their path was, it draws you in a little bit more. And I think the league's gotten away from that a little bit. I think they're going to have to lean back into it.
It's the Olympics treatment, right? There's two things that I think can do it, right? Open up salary caps. That's one way that you're going to get national broadcasts, right? Because I'm not a Man City fan, but I watch Man City all the time because either you love them or you hate them, but you can't stop watching them in the Premier League. And that doesn't make me less of a fan of Arsenal. So the quicker MLS can get to a point where you have a few of your Yankees, Red Sox, those types of things of what you stand for or whatever, or allow teams to really compete on a different spectrum. And by the way, I think a lot of the owners would be okay with that, that sort of model, because it establishes something a little bit different than every year, every team thinking that they can win. And then the part two is, again, the Olympics treatment, right? F1 is what it is because of Drive to Survive. It's not because of people loving to watch racing. It's because it humanized everything on the inside, and it gave you an inside look. It's the all or nothing series. It's all those types of things. Then now you have a platform and you have a built-in audience baked into Apple TV to be able to do that. Now, I will say the downside is that it will not be available on that platform without an additional subscription. So while you get the subscription with a season ticket, you will have to buy an additional Apple subscription that is like the Apple TV Plus or something like that. It's an additional subscription amount to get on the platform to see the games.
Are they? I didn't see that. They're hiding that information.
Jonathan Tannenwald actually posted that later in today when they were trying to clarify what it all means for the subscription. Is that it's not? It'll be an additional kind of
tiered subscription. Yeah.
Oh, you're unhappy about that, Jimmy. I could tell.
Well, I was like, that was a really cool perk, and now I'm a little disappointed that there's still an additional cost.
It's plus plus.
It's Apple plus plus.
Yeah, it sucks. Now my parents have to spend $5 more a month for me to use their login.
I have to pay $5 more to watch Charlie Davies talk about the Revolution. You know what I mean? on Bob Kraft's NFL turf. You know,
Yeah.
Oh man, that is intense. All right, guys, I'm coming to the end of this show. I think everybody is, we're getting to that point. We're getting a little crazy, and I know it's really late there for Charlie and his pajamas that he's wearing.
No, it's only 1 in the morning.
It's only 1 a.m. So let's go. Final thoughts of this In Soccer We Trust episode, the recap of our 1-1 draw, U.S. Men's National Team versus El Salvador. Charlie, I'm coming to you first. You can go to bed as soon as humanly possible.
Yes. Happy that some players stepped up, and one in particular is Jordan Morris. I mean, we've seen the struggle he's had to kind of endure over the past.
I don't think everybody appreciates that struggle, by the way. I don't think they know his story, which kind of speaks to what we're talking about.
Especially because Charlie was saying send him home. Charlie was saying send him home after the last performance. And now
he justifies his call up with that goal, but Haji Wright disappointed. In terms of
Horvath, Reggie Cannon. So J-Mo's stock went up for you.
Yeah.
Musa solidified.
I think J-Mo still
he's on the bubble. He's on
the 26 help. The 26 roster helps him tremendously.
Okay.
But you know, as a coach, if you're a manager and you're watching players, you're giving them substitute appearances. If they can come up with moments like that, that's going to stick in your mind. That's going to resonate with you when you're thinking about, oh, if we're down a goal here, who can I put in to make a difference? Mm-hmm. If we're just whipping crosses in, that moment of him making an adjustment to win the header, to put it in the back of the net, I'm going to be like, okay, we're down a goal. The team's bunkering in. I need someone who can get on the end of this cross. Jordan Morris is going to go in. So that helps him, especially with the struggle at the 9. Cameron Carter-Vickers, I thought he did himself
justice. Just by being solid, right?
Yeah, not making any mistakes, right? But I don't think we really answered any real questions. It still puts us in the same position where we got to wait for 6 months. We got to see how things play out.
Okay. Yeah. No, I mean, you're right. There's still club form is going to dictate, I think, some of these questions that we have some answers for. Heath, final thoughts.
Yeah, just I'm on the same line of like looking back at these last four games. I know we're gonna have plenty of time to talk about the window as a whole, but like just looking back, thinking like I was pretty pissed off about these two games that we had to play, and then now seeing sort of a breadth of circumstances. And when you're a coach, you want to go through a bunch of different things, not the same repetition. You know, something gets thrown at you differently. How do your players react? How do they rise to the challenges that present themselves, especially in real time, going down a man? Those types of things are real things that could happen in a World Cup. Those are real things that happen in qualifying, and so. For them to come through that and do as well as they did, I'm satisfied there. But similarly with Charlie, I'm still left kind of with more questions, and I don't know if I'll ever have those answered. You know, which is how many bedrooms does Charlie have in his house?
And not in the next 10 years.
Yeah, not in the next 10 years. Yeah.
As Apple TV bankrolls Charlie's new mahogany. I appreciate that. All right, my final thought for everybody is that we're coming back at you on Thursday. But it's going to be a little bit later because on Thursday, they're going to announce who the World Cup cities are for both Canada, both all three of Canada, Mexico, and the U.S. And we're going to break that all down after the announcement. It's going to be happening at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific. Join us live for that or catch us on any podcast platform of your choice. Make sure you hit us up on Twitter, ISWT Pod. Make sure you leave us a little P+. You're entered to win the $100 gift card. And that's all I got. We're going to come at you on Friday as well. So a lot of In Soccer We Trust action coming your way this week, and we love that you are part of our journey. So on behalf of producer Des, producer Alex, Charlie Chuck Wagon Davies, and Hollywood Heath Pierce, I'm Jimmy Conrad, also known as El Guapo, and we will see you guys very soon. Thanks for watching and listening. Later.
Paramount Plus original docuseries returns.
The last time I saw Max, he looked at us laughing, and then everything changed in a blink of an eye.
My feeling as a detective is that he was murdered.
Yahoo Entertainment calls it a spine-chilling docuseries showcasing real-life tragedies.
What if it was your child who went missing?
We need to know the truth.
Never seen again. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.